Obi Igbuna right here on WPFW's Midday Jazz and Justice. I'm Jared Ball, your host. The phone lines are lit up, and we're inviting that at 202-588-0893. So as we turn back to the phones, we have a lot of people trying to weigh in. We have a lot to cover, so we're going to ask everybody to please adhere to a maximum 60 seconds and, if possible, 30-second quick comment or question so that our guests can have a chance to respond. And, caller, thanks for your patience. Welcome to the air. You are on the air with WPFW's Midday Jazz and Justice. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Oh, thank you. Good afternoon. I'd like to know your opinion, your guess, that is, about the visit of Omar Gaddafi, and is he for this AFRICOM and whatever else that's going on?
All right. Thank you very much. Do you know Gaddafi's relationship to AFRICOM or to anything regarding
the whole African continent is against it, with the exception of Kama in Botswana, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf in Liberia, and Yadawa in Nigeria, and Odinga in Kenya. It's only a handful of those neo-colonialist leaders in Africa that forget that they're leaders of independent sovereign states that are going along with this genocidal move.
But even they haven't allowed for bases to be developed there. Is that correct?
Well, this is the thing. 48 hours before Obama's victory, his Africa policy advisor on the election, Whitney Schneiderman, spoke with the Africa Ambassadors Group in Washington, D.C., and they said that the tactical compromise might be they won't put the bases and installations in Africa because they're anticipating what the resistance at the grassroots level will be, but they'll put the base somewhere in the United States but still maintain the strategical and tactical focus of this initiative. So as long as this initiative is an agenda item for them, we must build a worldwide coalition to smash it. And yes, the target in Southern Africa is Zimbabwe.
And but there is a relationship between Libya and Zimbabwe, correct? They have business relationships, and there's a good amount of investment, oil relationships, etc.
Very solidarity that has gone back a long way to when they were fighting in Zimbabwe. They were fighting in the bush from 1966 to 1980. And Gaddafi, now the current chair of the African Union, it was his recommendation in that capacity to calling for the lifting of sanctions, and the legwork that was done for that was by the previous chair of the African Union, the president of the Democratic Republic of Tanzania, Kikwete, who did an excellent job of using his knowledge of Southern Africa, understanding that Southern Africa as a region is the last defense against neocolonialism in Africa, and knowing at a social level and on a cultural level, the people of Southern Africa focus as one family. That's why President Obama deciding to renew sanctions was a very arrogant measure, because he's giving the impression that he's more knowledgeable about the needs of the Zimbabwean people than Zimbabweans themselves and the neighboring region that has unanimously called for the lifting of sanctions from the moment they were imposed 8 years ago.
All right, WPFW 89.3 FM. Caller, thanks for your patience. Welcome to the air with your comment or question.
Thank you, WPFW, and you two brothers for waking us up this morning. My comment is, what does the United States really want with Zimbabwe? And the fact that I've been noticing that China has been raping and pillaging Africa and getting away with it. You know, we owe China a whole lot of money, so nobody's talking about that. And the fact that when back in the day, when we needed help in Africa, we had Cuba, and they're neutralizing Cuba. I need you to wake us up on the latest and greatest on those three things.
Thank you, Obi.
Okay, sure. I'm glad you brought that up, caller. In President Mugabe's speech to the General Assembly on Friday before last, he called for the lifting of the blockade on Cuba and highlighted how this blockade has cost Cuba $96 billion. And that is for people to make the comparison and the parallels between the Cuban blockade imposed by Kennedy in 1962 and the Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Act of 2001, imposed by George Bush, but pushed through the Congress by Donald Payne, the expert on Africa, if you will, inside Congressional Black Caucus circles, who, as I said earlier, is the current chair of the U.S. Subcommittee on Africa and Global Health, who in an interview with me said the same thing that Morgan Tsvangirai said, that it's up to the behavior of President Mugabe and ZANU-PF to determine whether the sanctions should be lifted. So in the case of Cuba, and also President Mugabe is the first African head of state to receive the Jose Marti Award, which is the most prestigious award Award in Cuba. He got it 5 years before Nelson Mandela. Then 6 years ago, he got the Simon Bolivar Award in Venezuela, which is patterned after the Jose Marti Award and is Venezuela's highest honor. So we asked the question, the same question that SNCC asked to Martin Luther King in the 1960s, how can I be nonviolent in Mississippi, nonviolent in Alabama, but not nonviolent in Vietnam? How do you support Cuba? How do you support Venezuela? How do you campaign passionately for the lifting of the blockade on Cuba, but support the sanctions on Zimbabwe?
And speaking of radicalism and the revolution, the cat has just dragged in someone else. Mr. Tom Porter has just joined the discussion. He's in the studio now with Obi Egbuna, U.S. correspondent to the Zimbabwean Herald, for a discussion on all things related to Zimbabwe and African politics. Welcome, Mr. Porter, to the program.
Well, it's good to be here with my young brother, Obi. Mm-hmm. It's always informative and fun.
No question. We do have some callers who've been waiting, or at least one caller has been waiting patiently. And caller, I want to bring you in, and then we'll get back to the discussion with our two guests. Caller, thanks for your patience. Welcome to the air. You are now on the air with WPFW. Welcome.
Thank you. I'd like to thank Brother Obey for his brilliant summary of what's happening in Zimbabwe. I have lost contact with Zimbabwe since Dr. Obadeli and I met with the ambassador to offer our limited support from the Republic of New Africa. I was wondering how can we or get copies of the paper for which he writes, and if it's on the Internet, or can we subscribe to it or get it elsewhere?
All right. Thank you very much.
www.herald.co.zw. But you can just go to Google and type in Zimbabwean Herald. Remember, there are 6 hours ahead of us. That's just in time. That isn't in terms of politically ahead of us. They might be even further than that. But that's how you can get it. In connection to the articles that I've done, you can just type in Obi Egbuna on Zimbabwe, and that should give you access to the overwhelming majority of them. And there's a blog site called Zim Rise Up that you should be able to get access to some other articles as well. I want to thank the Republic of New Africa for their limited support on Zimbabwe, but very necessary support on Zimbabwe, because you being in the South and you understanding the relationship of agriculture to Zimbabwe and you understanding the role of the Congressional Black Caucus moving into the future on Zimbabwe, knowing that the overwhelming majority of them voted in favor of the Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Act of 2001, with only 5 of them abstaining, only to see 11 white congressmen, 9 white Republicans and 2 white Democrats vote against this measure. And now, at this summer, Gregory Meeks out of New York and Donald Payne led a delegation to Zimbabwe, and they're supposed to be going back in December. And we must not allow this to be presented to our community as a fact-finding mission, for they indeed know what is going on in Zimbabwe. They know the role that the U.S. and British embassy have played, functioning more like extensions of their intelligence agencies as opposed to a diplomatic corps. They know the fact that Zimbabwe has weathered the storm, and they know that they've diverted attention away from the sanctions. In 2007, the congressional liaison to their health liaison, Donna Christensen, received a resolution from 15 organizations in this country that raised the fact that Zimbabwe was denied access to Global Fund in the second, third, fourth, and sixth round of this decade to get resources from that pool, because they've had the most significant decline on AIDS in Southern Africa since the 21st century began, and are the only country in the world to have a national AIDS levy. So the Congressional Black Caucus knows that their position on Zimbabwe is wrong. They purposely are going to Zimbabwe now because the inclusive government is in power. They did not want to go and meet President Mugabe face-to-face on Zimbabwean soil before the inclusive government. They turned down an invitation to observe the 2002 presidential elections from President Mugabe, yet Congressman Donald Payne will tell you that he sent a letter to President Mugabe in 2001 and no one responded to it. And this is very important, because at this era, before, we would usually say we don't want to attack foreign policy in this country when the Democrats are in office, because that gave Republicans momentum. And then when Republicans get in office, we say we don't want to say too much because they'll put pressure on our ability to maneuver in this country. That old tactic, that old methodology needs to be trashed, and we need to let the Congressional Black Caucus know not only are they out of touch with the Democratic majority of Southern Africa, not only are they out of touch with the African Union collectively, but they are out of touch with the 40 million Africans inside U.S. borders that would never tolerate, never endorse a genocidal measure, a cowardly measure as those sanctions. They reek of blood, they reek of poison, and we need to get them lifted now.
That's Obi Igbuna right here on WPFW's Midday Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM. I'm Jared Ball, your host, here with you every Monday from 1 to 3, and happy to be so. I did want to ask you about that because you've given us an interview you've done with Donald Payne, correct?
Yes.
And we're going to post on Vox Union this evening.
You got some goods next to you.
Well, so yeah, we're going to put all this audio up so people can hear it in its entirety. But one of the questions I had regarding this Congressional Black Caucus, or what some are now calling the Corporate Black Caucus, is just how supportive a body they can be. I mean, I was looking at some of the pictures some comrades of mine got from this most recent gathering, and, you know, you see the stuff that we've seen for years now. Uh-huh. I mean, it's Wells Fargo, it's Exxon, it's Pfizer, it's sponsored by all these major corporations. Uh-huh. To what extent can we expect them to do anything other than what they have been doing or that would be more supportive? And, Mr. Porter, I invite you to answer this question as well.
I would just say that it's just a question of what Frederick Douglass has taught us so long ago, that power concedes nothing without demand. I happen to agree with one of my biggest influencers, Kwame Ture, to say that the Africans inside the democratic machine are nothing but an illustration of visible powerlessness. So it's a question of the pressure that we put on them. There are two ways to approach it. Number one, we can do the groundwork in their districts so that we begin to engage those who vote for them religiously. And we can begin to expose them to information about Zimbabwe that they don't know. That's one way to do it. And the second way to do it is to work on a national level. We're about to put out in the next 3 weeks a statement that we're hoping key people in our community will sign in relationship to the matter. And one of the things we will expose is how genuinely misinformed they are about Zimbabwe. Because I asked Congressman Payne as soon as our interview was over, he said that they keep saying that the sanctions only focus on travel, banning President Mugabe and key representatives of ZANU-PF from coming to the U.S. So I asked him who Dr. Norbert Kanonga was. He didn't know off the top of his head. That's the Anglican Bishop of Harare. He doesn't hold any post in government. He just happens to be a supporter of ZANU-PF. And as we know, you can't be a clergy in Zimbabwe and set foot in U.S. soil unless you're going to pray for President Mugabe to die in your church, like Archbishop Pius Nube did. And Bishop Kanonga called for a Martin Luther King Center in Zimbabwe, where churches inside the United States can do HIV/AIDS work, clothing and computer drives, and in the tradition of the social gospel and liberation theology, campaign for the lifting of sanctions. What churches in our community that still walk that line, embrace that tradition, would hesitate to have an offer? So we need to get them to get him off the travel ban list as an act of goodwill so he can come toward the United States and engage his brothers and sisters.
Mr. Porter, let me get a quick response from you, and then we got to step aside, and we'll come back to our callers in just a second. But I do want to ask you this question regarding, you know, black leadership in general, but specifically the Congressional Black Caucus as it relates to Zimbabwe and to, as Obi said, the 40 million Africans in this country.
Let me just make a couple of observations before I weigh in on anything. And one is the whole question of sanctions. Sanctions, when they're designed to overthrow a government, or to attempt to overthrow a government by putting pressure on the people and therefore engendering cholera and other things such as that, are crimes against humanity, and we must say that. But also, I think we must make an observation, because first of all, we must understand the lesson of Cuba and why the sanctions, although they have hurt Cuba, have not overthrown the government of Cuba. And that has something in the building of a real socialist country. I think that we have to look at whether it's Zimbabwe or South Africa, all of the countries. And I think that in hindsight, they wish they had have completed the revolution rather than say, let Ian Smith live inside, unite with the Boers. I think they would, and because as we see in Africa, it's Guinea yesterday, you know, it's Zimbabwe, it's wherever you look in Africa, you know, you see the same thing. So these observations, I think we have to make. And then when we look at ourselves here in this country, we have to ask ourselves, how do we get from Gary to a black caucus that does not, to say nothing about its foreign policy agenda, it does not represent, nor does it attend to the needs of the 40 million African Americans who are in this country. And so because the black caucus, with the exception of few, like Barbara Lee, maybe, I don't really keep up with them anymore, but, you know, Barbara Lee, with the exception of a few, they're no different than any other white politician, than in many cases any other Hispanic politician. They do the bidding of the people who pay for them to get elected. And one thing about all politicians is that once they get in, they want to stay in. And either you're going to get labor money or corporate money. You don't want money from the people because you don't want to owe any allegiance to the people.
This afternoon, we are joined by Obi Igbuna, the U.S. correspondent to the Zimbabwean Herald, and Mr. Tom Porter has joined us as well. A lot to get into in the remaining 40 or so minutes of the program. And don't forget, after this 2:30 Laugh to Keep from Crying segment, we have an oldie but a goodie special presentation from a prior black president. I want to get back to the phones and reward the callers for their patience. Caller, thank you for yours, and welcome to the air with your comment or question on WPFW. Welcome.
How you doing?
All right.
Okay. The Congressional Black Caucus is useless, and so is Obama. It's totally disgraceful for Desmond Tutu to come on there and say he wants Mugabe dead. He should be back in South Africa trying to get some land for these people, like Mugabe trying to get some land. The white people took that land back in the 1800s. They need the land back. And CNN is nothing but government propaganda. So whoever reports from CNN is a government propagandist. All the major networks is nothing but government-run media. Have a nice day.
All right. Thank you very much. Obi, let me ask you about that, because Christiane Amanpour said on CNN, and I found the quote here. She quoted Desmond Tutu as saying that Mugabe destroyed, is the word, Zimbabwe. And then she also said, regarding what the caller mentioned in terms of white ownership of land, that she said 80% of the white-owned land came after the 1980 revolutionary movement, where it was legally signed off on and sanctioned by the new Robert Mugabe-led government. So then she asked Mugabe, why are they, quote, being hounded out of their land? Obi, could you respond to that, please?
I'll start with the latter part. Right around last year, when the signed the Memorandum of Understanding to begin the final phase of talks to bring about the inclusive government, the Commercial Farmers Union, which is the union that makes up the British/Rhodesian commercial farmers in the country, they said that they were 100% in accordance with the land reclamation program, and they would terminate and purge renegade elements from that union who were trying to cause problems in that country. Yes, many of them have left. So right now, there are still 900 white commercial farmers, British/Rhodesian commercial farmers in Zimbabwe, which gives Zimbabwe the third largest contingent of white commercial farmers in their country. That is why, if you remember last year also, the British Prime Minister Gordon Brown, right after the elections, threatened to send the British military into Zimbabwe to evacuate his citizens in case their lives were in danger. And believe me, when you get a chance to go back to Zimbabwe, you will see that these whites are not living under any fear. They're not living under any threat. And President Mugabe always goes back to the Zimbabwe reconciliatory policy of 1980, where Ian Smith and his Rhodesian cohorts were pardoned from the war crimes of humanity that they committed against the Zimbabwean people prior to the liberation struggle and at the heart of the liberation war. And so when these people people talk about this, this is just a way to divert attention from the real issue at hand. And as you know, Christine Amanpour did not say anything about the sanctions. And once again, they try to divert attention away from the fact that the United States government and the British government reneged from the promise that they made to the Zimbabweans during the Lancaster House negotiations.
But wait a minute, because it's not that she didn't say anything about the sanctions. She just denied that the sanctions were the cause of the problem.
Yes.
And that she kept wanting to focus on what Mugabe and his cohorts
exactly.
were doing mm-hmm. to cause the poverty and the disease.
Is doing three things which his detractors have done this whole decade. They either denied the existence of sanctions, diverted attention away from the sanctions, or diminished the impact of sanctions. And that is why they were shocked to hear the outgoing U.S. ambassador to Zimbabwe, James McGee, say that Tsvangirai will never get us to remove the sanctions because the sanctions were never his to begin with in the first place. So we see how these people are continuing to do this. So they can continue to try to do it, but the issue is that the National Newspapers Publishers Association, the 200 newspapers that say they represent us in mind and body and soul, and the National Association of Black Journalists, it's time for them to step up to the plate and do what Zimbabwe and represent Zimbabwe, because as the Zimbabweans tell you, in this era that Fidel Castro calls the war of ideas, information is the first line of defense. So let them step up to the plate and let them defend. As a matter of fact, what you're going to post later on, I did a 45-minute interview with President Mugabe's spokesperson, George Charamba, in his mid-40s, which smashes the myth that no young voice in Zimbabwe is being projected. He then made a 12-minute appeal to the National Newspaper Publishers Association and National Association of Black Journalists, which I'm going to put in the hands of Hazel Trice Edney, the chairman of that organization, later on today. And you'll get a chance to hear President Mugabe's speech to the UN a few weeks ago. To show we're balanced, you can hear the U.S. government perspective from Congressman Donald Payne, who I interviewed in June, and Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, who I interviewed in June also. All that will be posted up today on your site.
Well, I don't claim to be balanced. We might do our due diligence, but I don't claim to be balanced, and nor should anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go ahead and by the way, all that will be on VoxUnion.com later today. That's V as in voice, O X as in MalcolmUnion.com. Caller, thanks for your patience. Welcome to the air with your comment or question for Obi Igbuna and Mr. Tom Porter.
Hotep, Dr. Ball, and to your guest, Hotep. One thing I'd like to stress, a point I'd like to stress before I ask a question, is the fact that the black carcass or the black Caucasians, you know, have never really represented the interests of us as a people from their very inception. And they're no different from anybody else that's been threatened by organized crime bosses by passing envelopes with money, and it would...
And while I tend to want to agree with you, I do have to speed you up, unfortunately. We're up against the clock here.
Problem is that we must deal with the people that we have behind bars here. I'm talking about political prisoners. We have to stress the importance that these political prisoners, black people, men, women, and children, should be in the priority and the fact that we as a people are the indigenous sovereign people of the land, and Europeans,
Thank you very much.
Not home.
Thank you very much for that. And in fact, we did in fact deal with that. Thank you for the call, caller. And Obi, or Mr. Porter, let me get you to respond. Because in recent weeks, we talked about during Black August about Mutulu Shakur specifically and his relationship to Zimbabwe, or an attempted relationship that was blocked. Any response to that? And unfortunately, we only have a quick minute here, and then we'll come back and finish this up on the other side of the break. But go ahead, Mr. Porter.
Well, you know, I think you have to be careful in lumping everybody together to say that there have not been any progressive members of the Black Caucus. It's not true. And to say that, and I hesitate to say this, but the fact of it is that neither the ANC nor ZANU-ZAPU, they did not consolidate the revolution. And the problems that they're having, besides the intrigue of imperialism and what have you, and it's different than Cuba. Cuba consolidated the gains of the revolution. As Che Guevara says, in a revolution, one wins or one dies. And we have to really look at this, because it is still time for the revolution to be consolidated in Zimbabwe, and it's still time for the revolution to be consolidated in South Africa. And I think we have to get out of this thing where we're so concerned about showing to the West that we can be humble and forgive our enemies, that we, you know, we can forgive the crimes that they committed, the genocide. The people have a right in South Africa and Zimbabwe. They did then and they have now. They have a right to their pound of flesh. The fact of it is there's nothing that Iran can do to ever satisfy the West in terms of nuclear arms. And there's nothing that Israel can do for them to say anything about them having nuclear weapons.
Well, in fact, our current president said he didn't want to speculate about Israel's weapons. But more on that on the other side of the break. We have to come back. We have to step aside. This is Midday Jazz and Justice. I'm Jared Ball, your host. We're joined this afternoon by Obi Igbuna, the U.S. correspondent to the Zimbabwean Herald. Of course, Mr. Tom Porter has joined us as well. People have been very patient. Thank you for your patience, and welcome to the air with your comment or question on WPFW. Welcome.
The bottom line is this. Honestly, the U.S. is, with its economy run into the ground, its Congress dysfunctional, and a beehive of corruption and bribery of the worst magnitude, is no role model to any self-respecting people, and so unqualified to criticize Zimbabwe and President Mugabe. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much, caller, for making that point. Obi, Mr. Porter, anybody response?
Well, I think he's right in terms of the United States, but I think that if we're going to build a mass movement, and I think that's what's needed, I mean, I think we have to understand the relationship between 200 teachers being summarily fired on Friday, some of them marched out of the schools by policemen with the children watching. We have to understand the relationship between that and what's going on in Zimbabwe. We also have to understand what's happening in Honduras in relationship to that, because all of these places have people of significant African populations. And if we don't really talk about building a pan-African movement, and I'm talking about pan-Africanism in terms of Du Bois and C.L.R. James. I want to be very, very clear about that. And if we don't talk about building a mass movement in this country, and we have to talk about that, in order to talk about that, we have to build a united front, but we also have to engage in criticism and self-criticism. I think it's very good for us to be absolutists and say all of that or none of that. You can't have a united front unless you're willing to have parameters. Now, I don't think you should invite reactionaries into a united front, but I think that if you're going to, the concept of united front is having it broad and deep. And I think that we have to do that. And,
now, can I ask you, because I've also heard that the number of fired teachers was up to 300, and then I'm also, and then as Brother Bay was saying to me before the program, that this is after the mayor okayed $4 million for bike racks at Union Station. Is this correct? I mean,
Well, you know, I mean, the fact of it is they've been laying off teachers, the attrition, and I don't want to get off of the subject Zimbabwe and be an interloper here, but the fact of it is the misery index among black people wherever we are in this country, whether you're talking about joblessness, whether you're talking about the loss of homes through foreclosures and joblessness, whether you're talking about the lack of affordable health and none, that is going on everywhere we are in this country. But guess what? It's going on everywhere where we are in the world. And unless we begin to address those issues in some comprehensive way so that people see the connection between us and the rest of the world, and they us, Zimbabwe can't save itself.
Right. All right, let me get one more caller, and then Obi will turn to you. WPFW, welcome to the air with your comment or question.
Yes.
And turn down radio, please.
I'd like to say, ask.
Turn down your radio. I need you to turn down your radio, please, before we can bring you up. But, okay. And then please go ahead, yeah.
What will happen, what would be the effects of a United States of Africa worldwide? What would that produce?
Well, Obi, what do you think about that? Thanks for that question. I mean, what would that produce or how would that impact what we see happening in Zimbabwe? And, of course, this is what Kwame Nkrumah was calling
as
a long time ago.
As we celebrate this year, his 100th anniversary, it's always an appropriate question. It would give us the power base that we've talked about for a while. As one of his disciples, Kwame Ture, used to say, that Africa is the richest continent in the world, yet we're the poorest people in the world. It will resolve that contradiction once and for all. However, when we look at our genuine resistance in the 20th century moving into the 21st century, there was always a critical country based on its political landscape and relationship to our genuine resistance that guided our resistance. In the 1950s and the 1960s, those who were on the scene at that time know the role that Ghana played. Those who were active in the anti-apartheid movement from the late 60s all the way up to the early 80s know the role the effort of South Africa played. That's why we say that Zimbabwe will become for Africans what Palestine is for Arabs and Muslims, and what Cuba is, and more recently Venezuela are for Latin Americans, an issue for them to rally around. So when we talk about Pan-Africanism now, we talk about harmonizing theory and practice, especially at a point where we're heavy on words and light on deeds. So in the case of Zimbabwe, it gives us that opportunity. Yes, parallels must be made. You fire 300 teachers here. You closed down 23 schools last year, but you're going after the country in Africa that has a 94% literacy rate, going after the country on the African continent that built the first high school for Africans only 8 years before Brown versus the Board of Education in a place called Gurumunzi. So they are parallels. You're going after the African country that has the most significant decline in HIV/AIDS in Southern Africa, where that region where the HIV/AIDS scores and pandemic is most prevalent, at a time where Washington, D.C. is the HIV/AIDS capital of the United States of America. So the parallels do need to continue to be made. So if you Zimbabwe's theme is consolidating their national gains. So when we highlight their breakthroughs in education, everyone who's an advocate of saving our HBCUs, everyone who's an affirmative action advocate, everyone who defends these African independent schools, that automatically makes them an ally of Zimbabwe. When you bring up the land question, anyone who has a reparation sticker on their car, anyone who belongs to NCOBRA or NBUF or NAPO, anyone who's part of the democratic machine that supports Kanye's resolution for reparations in this country, that makes you an ally of Zimbabwe. So merging the experiences of slavery and colonialism is the key to intensifying our Pan-African resistance, but the key is to make sure that we harmonize the theory and practice. Lastly, and we look at how the reactionary activity is taking place in our community. The current chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, Barbara Lee, is on the board of directors of Africa Action, which has the Zimbabwe Solidarity Fund, which the Priority for Africa Network, Trans-Africa Forum, and Africa Action, money is being funneled through the National Endowment for Democracy, the Cold War instrument of Ronald Reagan, where the current on their board of directors, Gregory Meeks, is now on that board, and Donald Payne was on that board for 9 years. And that is the way that money is being funneled from the National Endowment of Democracy to Zimbabwe. And Carl Gershman, their president, on Donald Payne's hearing, he openly confessed that right now they're financing 14 civil society groups in Zimbabwe. And you notice people are talking more about these civil society groups, and these civil society groups are renegade elements of MDC that broke ranks with the Shangri faction of MDC because they were very angry at him for going into the inclusive government, because they wanted him to pursue the original agenda of helping the West force an illegal racist regime change in Zimbabwe.
Let me, this is WPFW 89.3 FM, Midday Jazz and Justice. I'm Jared Ball, your host here with you every Monday from 1 to 3 p.m. But Obi, let me go ahead, because we're quickly running out of time, and I know that the answer to this next series of questions is going to be a long one, so I'm going to make this, put all this together and get you to use these as your concluding comments.